gentle about it, please.
Thank you. Thank you.
Whoa.
Good evening. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables group, and it's always great to be here. And somebody asked me whether one of the guys who drove up in a couple cars with a bunch of guys, and one of them asked me, he says, "Would I like a cup of coffee before the meeting?" And I said, "No, I really don't want to be awake for this. Just wake me up." So I want to congratulate. It was great listening to the birthday people. Stevie B, so good to see you. You never call, you never write. Wonderful, wonderful guy. Him and his wife, beautiful child. It's always great to see him. And I know he did a great job with the steps here before I got here. And I want to congratulate Ellie Ann for 3 years, and Casey, and Chris, and Craig, and Bobby, the birthday celebrants. That's incredible. I drove up here. You know, I started thinking as people were talking about a story that I read quite often here in Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, and that's Bill Dodson's story. And at the end of Bill Dodson's story, it says the following. It would be hard. This is Bill right after he got out of the Bill D. He was the third guy in AA. Right after, this was during that 35 to 39 year period, 1935 to 1939, when these guys were all reading the Bible and doing prayers and all that sort of stuff, and reading some of the stuff that we were talking about last week, 1 Corinthians 13. And he had gotten out of the hospital. He had about 3 weeks sober, and Bill Wilson was there. He was trying to figure out, you all look pretty sober to me, but anybody ever experienced anxiety while you're sober? You ever have that happen to you? Anybody ever have sleepless nights, you know? You can't really die from not having sleep, you know? You can't. I just want to let you know that until you see in the paper, in the front page of the Fort Lauderdale Sentinel, "Man found dead for lack of sleep," don't get disturbed about that thing. You know, you'll get plenty of sleep. But apparently, Bill Dodson was sober, but he was anxious. He was upsettable, and he noticed, as you notice in here from time to time, that there were guys that were sober that did not seem nervous. And so this is what he said when he, 15 years later, when he wrote his story for the big book. He said, "It would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, something that I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something that I hadn't got. And I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of the hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch, and I was listening and trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. Bill looked across at my wife and said to her, 'Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people. I think I have the answer.' Bill was very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing, and he had given God the credit for having done it. And he's so grateful about it, He wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, "The Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep telling people about it," has been a sort of golden text for the AA program and for me. And, you know, I noticed in the start of this big book, this book we call the Big Book, which is the basic text. I know it's the basic text because it says in the preface, "Because this book has become the basic text for our society and has helped such a large number of alcoholic men and women to recovery, there exists strong sentiment against any radical changes being made in it. Therefore, the first portion of this volume describing the AA recovery program has been left largely untouched in the course of the revisions made for the second, third, and fourth editions." So I guess even though I go into a lot of AA history, and I really commend Dr. Bob and the good old timers to you, what I really want people to consider doing is believing what's in this book. Believing what's in this book. Following what's in this book. Taking seriously what's, you know, this is either the truth or it's a lie. And there is a tendency, I suppose, to live off the quote, wisdom of the rooms. Now, God knows I love alcoholics. You know, I sponsor alcoholics. I've been sponsored by alcoholics. Alcoholics are great people. But you know, this ain't exactly Well People's Anonymous. And from time to time, you'll hear a couple of good things in rooms, and you get some good guidance, and maybe the right answer here and there, but we got all sorts of opinions and stuff going on, and you know, I've just always felt that the more I come closer to what's put down in this book, instead of my own ideas, because I'm a rationalizer, I like to tell myself rational lies. I've never told myself that this should be interpreted in such a way other than the way I think it should be interpreted. I mean, it seems right to me. And, you know, in a funny way, you know what I find in my own life? That generally I tend to interpret things to make my life more comfortable. One of the great, you know, it says we have to quit playing God. One of the great things about playing God is because when you are God and you make believe you're God, of course, we don't, you know, one of the things they don't define in the book, really, I don't see it defined, I mean, it's in there probably somewhere, is what they mean by playing God. They say, first of all, we had to quit playing God. You know, it'd be nice if they give us some illustrations of, you know, how do you play God? Do you think it's possible that we could be playing God in our life all the time and not even know we're playing God? You know what I like about, you know what's interesting? I drove up here with Pastor Kerry. My sponsor is John Glenn, Pastor John Glenn, who's in the audience, who I met him at a Bible study, and he's got 57 years. He's here somewhere. And he introduced me to Pastor Kerry Miller, who's a wonderful man, 67 years, an evangelist and senior pastor, and he's somewhere up here. And we drove up here together in my car. I drove them up here. You'll see Carrie, he's like in a walker there. He's back there somewhere. He prayed for me before the meeting, so hopefully we have a shot here. And what do you think, when you're riding in a car with two Baptist preachers, what do you think you talk about for the hour it takes to get up here? I mean, take a guess. Take a wild, no, not women. Well, actually, sometimes, but in the biblical way, you know what I mean? Like the book of Ruth or something, you know? Yeah, we talk a lot about God and the Bible, and I think we were discussing Calvinism or something. I don't know what we were doing, and they were picking on me because I'm a Presbyterian, or I don't know what they were doing. They were upset with me, or we discussed stuff like, so we talk about God, you know? And we're going to probably talk about him on the way back. And, you know, and you know why they like coming up here? They like coming up here because when we come up here, we talk about God here too. And You know, when I was watching those four guys come up here, like every one of them, and the gals, you know, they were talking. I noticed that they were talking about God. And one guy said, "What did he say? God in the big book, God in the study." They were just talking about God. And so like I'm always talking about God, and my pastors are always talking about God, and the car we're talking about God. I come up here, the guys who came up were always talking about God, and I couldn't help but notice that in the big book, Bill Dotson was talking about God, and how Bill Wilson was talking about God. Did you notice that? That's Bill with like 30, like whatever, 80 years ago. The guys who started this thing, he says, "The Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease. I've got to keep talking about it and telling other people." And that's what those guys were doing. They came up here. They said, I've been cured of this of the, we've all been cured of a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. We've recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body where we couldn't stop drinking and drugging. And you know what I noticed? These guys all got up here and they all gave credit to God. They did the same exact thing that Bill Wilson did. You know, they did that. And then I read throughout the whole book, and the whole thing is about God and giving credit for God and saying, "See, the relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others." Like, where do we go off track on this thing? I don't know. I mean, to me, it's pretty simple. You know, the more you give credit to God, the better things get. I mean, this book is either true or it isn't. The whole book is about God. The whole book is about having a relationship with God. The whole book, as a matter of fact, it even tells you who he is. Did you know it? You see, I know you guys hear about the higher power, choose your own God. But here's the problem. You see, A is sneaky. It really is sneaky. It says, it's written by alcoholics for alcoholics, right? It's written by alcoholics for alcoholics. We're manipulators, right? We're liars, right? I mean, you know, for good causes and everything like that. So they lie to you. They lie to you. You know they lie to you. You know they write you a book and they say it's not about God, don't worry about God, choose your own conception of God, and then they write a whole book and they tell you all about God and his rules and regulations and what you got to do and everything like that and how you have to obey him and pray to him, and they tell you all about it. They tell you exactly if you want to follow this book, if you don't think they're any less than this way, it tells you all about them. I'll point out to you it tells you all about God in this book. You know, it's like in the seventh step in the 12 and 12. That's one of my favorite deals. You know, I'm not going to go to it now, but I'll talk about it more when we get to the seventh step where they say we don't want to deprecate material values. Nobody wants to get into an argument about material values, you know, about things and stuff and pelf and money and everything like that, you know. And then, so, you know, you feel kind of good because your whole life is spent worrying about money and sex and romance and stuff like that, but they're not going to touch that. You know what I mean? Like Bill Wilson says, we're not going to debate over sex or love or anything like that. So they say, oh, thank God for that. I can believe in God and be an AA and, you know, rape chickens, you know. It's okay. There's no problem. I can still be a monster. I can do whatever I want to do. I mean, you know, it's sort of like giving us leeway to see, you know, saying whatever we do is okay. Man, boy, that's like AA candy. Come in AA, stop drinking, and you can do anything. Rob, steal, rape, rip, run, and then... But then right after they tell you that we don't want to deprecate material things, they say, but no people on the place of the earth has made a worse time of living by those rules than alcoholics. We've always wanted more of money, power, and romance. And they throw like romance in there, and like our entire lives are about what is she doing, what is he doing, what is he... And then they start attacking that stuff, and they start talking about its character building. It's about believing in God. See, the relationship with him is writing great event. In other words, they tell you one thing, and they pull the rug out from you, and they tell you something else. And you know, the ones that... And like, what are you going to believe? What are you going to do? Well, it all works out in the wash, because the ones that stay sober for long periods of time to good purpose and feel good about themselves and help other people, they figure it out. And the ones that don't figure it out and aren't willing, they don't. It's as simple as that. And that's the way it works. So I think it's kind of neat that, you know, there's a great... One of the reasons I like AA and I like the way we are is, you know, it tells you a lot of things about, you know what it says in the book about God? It says if you make, this is something it says about him, if you make a decision for him, a serious, sincere decision for God and you believe in him, It says, let me tell you what it says. It says this in the book. Check it. It says all sorts of remarkable things will happen to you. It even says, see to it, your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass to you. It says that. This is what it says. It says, it tells you all about him. He says, being all powerful. It tells you he's all power. It says, he will give you everything you need if you stay close to him and you perform his work well. You'll lose fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. You'll be reborn. That's what it says. It says that right in the book. You know, this book is either lying to you or it's telling the truth. It tells you exactly what God's going to give to you. You know what else it says about God? It says one of the books that they found absolutely essential, the first AAs found absolutely essential, we talked about this before, was a book called Sermon on the Mount, which is actually the book of Matthew 5, 6, and 7. In the book of Matthew, they talk about the lost sheep. Now, you guys need to be interested. You guys should be interested in this lost sheep deal. Trust me, you need to be interested in this lost sheep deal. This is an important thing for you to be interested in. You ought to read this thing about the lost sheep. You know what it says about God? It says he leaves the 99. He leaves the church. He leaves the 99 sheep. He says if one sheep gets lost, God leaves. He says he calls him the good shepherd. He says the good shepherd leaves his 99 sheep and he goes after the one that's lost. He goes after the ones that's lost. He describes God as a shepherd, like a shepherd watches over sheep, who goes after the lost sheep and leaves the 99 to go after the one. And when he finds them, he puts them on his shoulder and brings them back to the flock, and that there's a double celebration in heaven. It's like a party because they found the lost sheep. And you need to be interested in that because every one of you was a lost sheep. You know, that's the guys he values, the screw-ups, the worst of the world, the refuge of the world, the thing that the world throws out. That's what he's, like, interested in. And that's why I like AA, because he, like, got... So every one of you guys, as far as I'm concerned, are here because he was, like, you may not realize this, he was, like, looking for you. You may not have been looking for him, but he was looking for you. He was out to get you. And he grabbed you all, whether you knew it or not, and whether you believe it or not, or whether you give gratitude for him or not, like Bill Wilson, and he threw you into this group here, in one place, where we could get a hold of you, talk to you a little bit more about him, you know what I mean? So I want to read you a couple of things. Well, let me read you this one thing, which I read almost at every meeting, because and the reason I think it's important, look, this is a step series. Ostensibly, this one's about the fifth step. We'll get maybe in a little into that. But the bottom line is it's a step series. This isn't, I'm not at a detox center. You know, I'm not going to be sitting here worrying about if there's a guy with 2 hours, whether I'm going to get him upset. You know what I mean? This is something that I'm assuming that are people that are want this thing. They want to go farther with this thing. And they want to grow. They want to get what Bill Wilson said. He's interested in the next frontier, which is emotional sobriety. He said the real problem with alcoholics is unhealthy dependencies. So when I went to step series, and I went to a lot of step series, as many as I possibly could, because like Bill Dodson, I knew there was more. I knew there was something I didn't have. So maybe I could get it from this guy. Maybe I could get it from Ray O'Keefe. I went to a lot of Ray O'Keefe step series. I went to Joe Snyder step series. I went to Eddie Edwards step series. I went wherever I could go. If somebody said, this guy is good, I went there to try to grab what I could grab. Most of the time, I didn't even understand what they were saying. I just kept on going because I knew there was more. At 3 years, I knew there was more because I was nuts. At 5 years, I knew there was more because I was... At 10 years, I knew there was... 15 years, I knew there was more. 20 years, I knew... 20 years, I started going to Bible study because nothing wrong with AA, but I needed somebody with 50 years. At 20 years, I needed somebody with 40 years and 50 years who were studying the Bible into that. They weren't into that today, so I went there. That's where I found John Glenn. That's where I found Carrie. I was going to go wherever I had to go to get more because I was spiritually not satisfied. I had a spiritual thirst. I had a thirst and a hunger. I wanted this thing. I wanted more. And the sign of somebody who's growing spiritually, is some sort of strange, unquenchable thirst for more of him, to get closer to him, which is why we never run out of the 11th step. No matter where we are, with 40 years, 50 years, 60 years, 70 years, you want to know something? You know what the 11th step says? We're trying to improve our conscious contact with Him. We're focusing more on Him. I hang around Pastor Carrie Miller. He's back there. You know, he's been preaching Him all his life, and all he wants to do is talk about Him and try to get closer to Him. Same thing with John Glenn. It doesn't matter where you are on the spectrum. They all want more of Him. You know, and somehow, how you behave and how you think and what your attitude is has something to do with the priorities you place on knowing Him. And, you know, now I understand you try to walk into Bark or maybe the detox center or something like that, and try, or probably your local bar, and try to talk to them about this. I understand they're going to stone you, they're going to shoot you, or maybe not. I've seen a lot of people with just a couple of days. You know, they're interested in they're dead in the water. They're dying. They've been looking for Him. They've been looking for a message of weight and depth. They ain't running out the door. You know, that's why I guess it says in our big book, it says burn the idea into the new man's mind, job or no job. You can do anything as long as you stay close to Him and have a relationship with Him. I guess that's why they say that. You know, maybe some newcomers actually want this thing. You know, maybe some old-timers actually want this thing. But I know I wanted more. Just like Bill Dotson, I wanted to hear more. That's why I went to Step Series. So when I come to Step Series and I do a Step Series, I'm really not doing it necessarily, although I think, quite frankly, I am in a sense, for the newest guy in the room. Although, weirdly enough, although, you know, I think I'm talking about God a lot and everything, many times new guys come up and they're like more excited than the old-timers. You know what I mean? I'm really focused on the people that are not sucking the bottle anymore. You know, sucking the bottle. Listen, so let me read this one part and then go into a couple other things. It says on page 25, and I say this, we have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and our lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we can never do by ourselves. And so if you happen to be one of those people that would like to have that deal happen to you, whether you'd like to experience, you know, that new freedom and that new happiness, you want to experience that heaven and that being rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence instead of just hanging in there, you know, one day. If you want to experience, that's real. That's real. I'm here to tell you something. I'm here to tell you that is real. That's the real deal. They weren't lying to you when they said that. Now, for years, I didn't think it was real. I suspected it might be real. I ran into people that looked like it real. It is real. There is concrete underneath those lily pads. It's the real deal. You know what I mean? I mean, I remember going to a meeting, and I had like 3 years sober, and some gal had like 25 years sober, and he did one of these lines, you know, my worst day sober is better than my best day drunk, and I wanted to slap her because I had 3 years and I was dying inside. Stuff that probably I had when I first came in that I didn't even realize I had was eating my liver at 3, 5 years, 10 years. And I couldn't stand myself. And a day didn't go by where I wasn't thinking bad thoughts about myself and other people. There was always something to panic about. You know, no matter how much I tried, it was the IRS, it was my wife. It was this judge, it was this, the feelings of fear and anxiety were always so magnified. It really, you know, when you got fear, fear sucks without booze. Let me tell you something. Listen, I'm not saying I ever want to drink, but let me tell you, there ain't no fear like sober 3 o'clock in the morning, what's going to happen to me fear. You know what I mean? Because you know it's never going to get better, and your life is over, and it's like death, and it's terrible. And you know, 3 o'clock, I don't know, between 3 o'clock in the morning for me is like eternity. It's like the clock is, like every minute is like 3 weeks. You know what I mean? It ain't never going to get better. And that's sober. That's That's what life is like sober for the first, I don't know, 20, 25 years. Sure, James, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. I'm sure none of you guys have experienced that. 3 o'clock in the morning, the clock ticking, your mind racing, you can't get back to sleep. You know your life is over. You can't stop thinking. It's 3 o'clock. An hour goes by, and you look at the clock, and now it's 3:01. Welcome to sobriety. So remember in 1 Corinthians 13, we read last week, I'm going to focus on this one deal. When I was a little child, I talked and felt like and thought like a little child. Now that I'm a man, my childish speech and feelings and thoughts have no further significance for me. At present, we are men looking at puzzling reflections in the mirror. The time will come when we shall see reality whole and face to face. At present, all I know is a little fraction of the truth. But the time will come when I shall know it as fully as God knows me. And the truth, trust me, will set you free from all fear. But first it'll piss you off and scare the crap out of you. You know what I mean? And I know when I first came in, I knew like a fraction of the truth, even though I thought I knew everything. And now after 32 years, I know like this much. You know what I mean? It feels a lot better, but it's like this much of the truth, you know? And you know how you learn about the truth? In drips and drabs over years and years after. You know how we get a new perspective? How do we get a new perspective? 1,000 forms of humiliation and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. That's how we get new perspectives in here. You know how we get rid of old ideas? Getting rid of old ideas is synonymous with a new perspective. You have a whole idea about who you are and what you are and who everybody else is and what the world is like and what it's really like. These are old ideas. You know how you get new perspectives on that? Through thousands of forms of humiliation, the crushing of our self-sufficiency. You know how you figured out that you might have a drinking problem? Through incredible pain. You know how you figure out that you may have a lust or a sex problem? Through incredible pain. You know how you figure out how you may have a money problem or a greed problem? Through incredible pain. You know how you figure out how you may have an envy problem? Through incredible pain. You know how you figure out how you have all through incredible pain? Over years and years and years. Because fortunately, it doesn't happen to us all at once because like we'd be smashed. You know, it's we get smashed and we learn a little, and you know, with alcoholics, you know how defiant we are and how stubborn we are. What do we get? We get smashed over a period of 10 years, 15,000 times, and we learn one thing. And we're not even sure of that. You have to draw it out and be talked to and everything like that and go to 15 meetings in a treatment center and learn one thing. You know, we got to go to a treatment center and learn one thing. We got a problem with alcohol. That's 28 days or 8 months out of your life. You know what I mean? And that just puts you in an A group so you can just be crazy for the next 30 years, you know, and try to figure out the rest, you know? So in any event, I want to read just one more thing, and then I want to tell you a story. I think it's like a fifth step story. I'm not sure. You'll see what, but it's a story. It'll be good. Here it is. Remind the potential newcomer that their recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon their relationship with God. Did you know that was in there? You ever hear anybody in AA say, don't talk about God to the newcomer? You ever hear that in AA? Or maybe some of you think that that's somebody, you know what some people think? They think that's AA gospel. They think that is AA. They think that's from the AA big book. They think, well, yeah, in AA, we don't talk about God until you got 20 years. You know, you might scare somebody. You know, people come up to you and say, you know, you talk about too much. Yeah, people will talk about God and say, stop talking about God. You're scaring off the newcomers. And you know what you think? You think that's AA. You know what that is? That's not AA. You know what that is? That's the wisdom of the rooms. That's a bunch of alcoholics that are scared to actually do this program and dive headlong into the pool of belief and are holding back so they won't reap the great benefits of this thing because they're scared of total commitment, because they're worried about what people think about them or they'll laugh at them. So they're trying to dumb down AA and let everybody know that if you talk about God, it'll scare away newcomers, you know what I mean? And then nobody will talk about God and we can just suffer mediocre sobriety. where you're sober but you're depressed. You're sober but you're getting into all sorts of sin and craziness and crap, where you're self-destructive and hurting yourself either with money or sex or relationships, and you never seem to get better because you're always trying to manage your own life or figure out how to get out of it, and you never get away from that because you're never focusing on God. You're just trying to manage your way through life. And God forbid you should talk about it, because you heard that we don't talk a lot about God because it scares away newcomer. And this says, remind the potential newcomer that their recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon their relationship with God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every newcomer. Every newcomer. Newcomer. That they can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that they trust in God and clean house. Remember what Abby Thatcher said to Billy. He says, I got religion. He said the essential elements are this. You got to depend upon God. Belief in the power of God plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain the new order of things were the essential requirements. Simple but not easy. A price had to be paid. It meant the destruction of self-centeredness. I must in all things turn all things over to the Father of light who presides over us all. That's how, you know what that is? That, by the way, you know what that is? That's Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the AA program. That's our basic text. So let me ask you this question. Where did this not talk about God at AA meetings or newcomers came from? Where did it come from? Came from you guys. Came from you guys. You guys are the most wonderful thing that ever happened to me, and you're going to kill me. You're going to kill me if I listen to you. If I don't get a sponsor and I don't get the material and I don't get the books and I just sort of glide around on my ass because I'm basically lazy and sort of like just take it, you know, word of mouth, what I want to hear what I want to hear and do what I want to do, I'm going to die in here. Because unless I know what the truth is and what the material is, thank God we have material. We wouldn't even be around if I don't dive into the material, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, the Big Book, the 12 and 12, and get into this stuff. What the basic A is, you know something? I will hear stuff that'll be like ear candy to me. That'll tell me, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that. And it'll tell me that I don't have to do stuff that, quite frankly, I don't want to do anyway. And all that stuff that I thought I had to do, which was uncomfortable and I was scared of doing, I'll find a lot of people in here who'll tell me, don't worry, you don't have to do that. They'll tell me that. And I'll wonder why I'm 15 years sober and I've slipped 50 times. Or why I can't get sober. Or why I'm so miserable. You know, because I'll wonder about that. But if you focus on the material, and you find people that are focusing on the material, it'll all start making sense to you. So, I'm going to read this, and I'm going to tell you a story. Well, I won't read this. I'll read it next week. I'll tell you a story. Because it's like a fifth step story. It is a fifth step story, actually. Because the fifth step is about, number one, it's about... One of the things it says in the 12 and 12 is what this whole thing is about is getting humble. It's ego deflation. It's getting transparent. And nothing can get you more transparent than speaking honestly to another individual. Not that I would know how to speak honestly to somebody. And, you know, this kind of stuff will get you transparent. Why do people, when you ask them to speak before a group, say things like, I'm not ready? What does that mean? What do you mean, I'm not ready? That's right. That's Alki code for I'm scared. What if I accidentally, because I'll get up here and I won't have a script, what if I accidentally, like, I might blurt out the truth? Listen, you know, the truth is, I don't even know what the truth is, but the truth is, I suspect I know what the truth is. And if the truth is anything close to what I think the truth might be, I ain't putting myself in a position where I might accidentally say it. And so I live my whole life, you know what I mean? Covering up the truth from you, from me. I have no idea what the truth is. So that's what the fifth step is. The fifth step is all about your first sojourn into talking to another human being about, well, as close as you can come to at the time of the truth, which is probably real far off the mark. Remember, we see through a glass darkly. Probably far off the mark, but it's probably better than you used to do when you were drinking. And you get a little, and as you go along, one would hope you get closer and closer to what the truth. Hey, listen, things I thought about myself when I was talking about my fifth and fourth step to my sponsor, and my opinions I had about myself and other people and what I did was completely different than when they were actually going on in my life. I mean, it was a whole change of ideas and attitudes. And 10 years after that, I had even a greater change. I mean, you just get more transparent. You see things differently as things go along. So I want to tell you, I don't know if it's a cute little story, but it's a true story about the power of the truth and the power of communication. When I was about 7 years sober, I was having a real problem, 7 or 8 or 9 years sober, and it's not even that I'm embarrassed to tell you what the problem is. I can tell you what the problem was, but it would just add on too much time. I don't want to take too much time. You're going to have to trust me. I had something going on in my life that was eating my lunch. I was filled with fear. Anybody ever have anything going on in their life where they're filled with fear? You wake up in the morning and you're scared about something. You go to sleep and you say, I got to stop. And you realize, it sort of comes to you, the more you think about it, that you're not doing anything by thinking about it except killing yourself. So you say things like, I got to stop thinking about it, but you can't stop thinking about it. It's like you can't stop drinking, you can't stop thinking. So you think about it for 10 minutes, it drives you nuts, and then you distract yourself with something. And maybe you go to a meeting or something like that, and you feel good for like 5 seconds, and then you leave the meeting, then you start thinking about it again, and then you go to sleep and you're thinking about it, and you're waking up thinking about it. It's like syrup on your hands. You can't get rid of it. It's like all over you, and you think you should tell somebody about it, but you can't tell anybody about it, because even though you're sober 1 year, 2 years, 10 years, 15 years, you can't tell anybody because they wouldn't understand. You know what I mean? You couldn't explain it to them. And as a matter of fact, not only wouldn't they understand, you can't explain it to them, you're scared to tell them about it. And you don't even know why you're scared to tell them about it, but you ain't telling nobody about it because you know nobody will be able to help you. So if nobody's going to be able to help you and you're scared and something bad's going to happen, the only thing you can do is try to figure it out yourself. So what you do is you try to figure out the answer yourself, and you don't have a clue. You're like a rat chasing your tail, you know what I mean? So that's where I was at, 7 years sober, going to meetings, doing step meetings. You understand what I'm saying? It wasn't a fun deal. And there was real consequences at the end of this fear. There was my life was going to end, or something terrible was going to happen, or I was going to go to jail. Something was going to happen that's bad, you know? And let me tell you something. Like I said, there is no fear worse than sober fear. You know, and where you're not drinking or drugging, you're just experiencing it upfront and personal. And I went to where you go away for a weekend, a retreat, a spiritual retreat. My sponsor made me go to a spiritual retreat, you know, by a guy named Father Al Grau. Al Grau had like 37 years at the time. He was a Jesuit priest, you know, like the Pope, a Jesuit, you know, like these smart guys. He had a PhD in psychology. He was running the Palm Beach Institute. And to make matters even worse, and he was an A, as I said, 32 years, to make matters even worse, he was a war hero. He was the only survivor of like the 1,000-mile Bataan March. So he was a Jesuit priest, you know what I mean? 1,000-mile Bataan March, PhD in psychology. And he's given this retreat, and he's talking to, you know, if you've ever been on a retreat, they give these talks, and then you walk away and you meditate, he gives these talks. So I knew that this was the guy. This was the guy. They're a priest that can't tell anybody. He's a psychologist, so he's smarter than anybody. He's a Jesuit, you know, he's this, he's that. This is the guy that's going to solve my problem. And I had done the fifth step, I had done all the steps and everything, but I hadn't talked to anybody about this problem because nobody would understand. But this is the guy I'm going to talk to. So I sign up to talk to somebody, to talk to him, and I wait my turn, and then I'm ushered into his office, and I'm going to unload on this guy. So, you know, he said, I introduce myself, Father Al, how you doing? Yeah, how you doing? And I say to him, let me tell you why I'm here. Let me tell you what's going on with me. And I start talking, and I'm 30 seconds into the deal as to why I'm concerned. 30 seconds. And believe me, this deal is going to take like 3 hours to explain. You know what I mean? I'm 30 seconds into it, and he holds up his hand and he says, I'm not the guy. I mean, can you imagine? Talk about premature ejaculation. I mean, I'm going to tell you something. Whoa. We're not even into foreplay here. Come on, you're cutting me. You're throwing cold water. He says, I'm not the guy. No, and of course, I'm an alcoholic, so what do I say? I said, no, you're the guy. And he says, I'm the wrong guy to tell this to. Trust me, I am not the guy. And I said, no, you are the guy. And he was more sober than me. So what he did was he said, okay, talk. So I did my 15, 20 minutes, you know, and I told him the whole thing. I said, that's it. He said, is that it? And I said, yeah, that's it. Now, I've told you before how my sponsors, how I was an abused child. You know, I had abusing sponsors. So, you know, you understand I was really a victim of Alcoholics Anonymous, unfortunately. I didn't have loving sponsors, you know. Maybe it was something about my personality. Nobody wanted to love me, you know what I mean? So he says, are you done? And I said, yes, I'm done. He says, are you done, really? He says, you finished? He says, yeah. I said, so what do you think? He says, what do I think? I said, yeah, what do you think? And he says, well, I'll tell you what I think. And he says, I think, you've heard this before, right, Jen? He says, I think that you are full of shit. Now, let me tell you something. I'm not exaggerating. I'm not pretty. This Jesuit priest, 67-year-old Jesuit, or 70-year-old Jesuit priest, PhD in psychology, but 10,000 march walk, you know, and you know, looks at me and says, after all that, and I'm not Catholic. I don't know much about confession, but I think you're supposed to say 10 Hail Marys and a banana. And stuff. I don't know what you're supposed to do, but I've never seen a movie where the priest says you're full of shit. You know? I think that's reportable to the Vatican or something, you know? And he says, I think you're full of shit. And he says, I'm full of shit. And then he proceeds for about 10 minutes to eviscerate me, to specifically, in detail, tell me why I'm full of shit. Why I'm full of shit thinking about this. Why I'm full of shit even worrying about this. Why I'm, you know, I should be ashamed. I mean, just beating the living spiritual crap out of me. You know what I mean? And then at the very end, he does what all good priests and AAers do. He says, after he beats me up and I'm a puddle of mush, he looks at me and says, thank you, son, go with God. Or something like that, you know? I guess to absolve himself of the whatever he did to me, you know what I mean? So I walk out of there. I don't know, you know, I expected that, you know, he put his arms around me and he'd love me and he'd kiss me and you're okay and take me up to Jesus and I'd be healed and everything would be fine and the world would change or whatever the hell was going to happen, you know? And I walk out of there. And of course, every person I run into, I say, listen, don't go. The priest, he's crazy. Don't talk to the priest. He's crazy, you know. He's a crazy priest, you know. So I walk and I go into my room. And, you know, my mind is, you know, whatever fear I have is now supplanted by the anger. Because I'm quoting, you know, love and tolerance is our code. You know what I mean? We're tough on ourselves and easy on others. I mean, who is this guy? Who does he think he is? He foists himself off as a priest, as he's sober. He picks it, you know, and I'm like going crazy. And I'm sitting in this little bed. There's like a little cross over the bed. And there's nothing. It's a bare room. It's like, I mean, like the Apostle Paul before they beheaded him. It's like in a room like this. And I'm sitting there, I'm saying, I can't believe, you know, and I'm going nuts. You know, for like 10 minutes thinking about what he said and what he did and everything like that. And all of a sudden, this thought went across my mind. It's a serious thought. You know, if you're an AA for a long period of time, this kind of crap can happen to you. You know, because you get brainwashed. You know what I mean? I told my sponsor, I said, I think you're brainwashing me. He says, well, maybe your brain needs washing. You know what I mean? So I'm sitting there and he's saying, and all of a sudden this thought comes across my mind. You know what the thought was? It was, maybe he's right. And the next thought, a nanosecond later, was, he is right. Everything he said was the truth. And the thing that was bothering me left like that. Never to return. Never to return. And that thing that was bothering me that could never return, never return again, was something about people pleasing and worrying about what other people thought about me that I had had my entire life. And it hampered me with fear in so many areas, and it was lifted from me never to return again. Do you know what it's like to have a fear that you don't even know you have of people and of their judgment? And you don't even know you've had it, but you know you've dealt with it all your life. You've been worried about stuff all your life. And then it becomes clear that you're scared because of these people might do this or they might say that something. And then all of a sudden, one day, it's like totally removed in a nanosecond, healed in a nanosecond. Never to have that fear come back again, to be totally free of that fear and experience life without fear, abundantly, without that fear, when for 37 years I had experienced, I had life, and now you're living life without, you know what it's like. I can't even explain to you what that's like. But if you understand what happened, I had put myself, because I had done, not the fifth step, because the fifth step is the first, but basically the fifth step is really a prototype of how we talk to people. And what, I had put myself in a position to be honest with somebody about what was going on, and I had emptied myself out and become vulnerable, and you know what he did? He crushed me. I mean, that's really what he did when you think about it. He crushed me with what? The truth. He told me the truth that I didn't want to. He wasn't like my friends in the bar who put their arm around me and says, nah, your wife loves you, you're okay. He wasn't like all my buddies, my BFFs or whatever it is, you know, saying, don't worry, they're all a bunch of crap and, you know, endorsing my book. He told me the truth. 100 forms of humiliation, the final crushing of ourselves, and all of a sudden I had a new perspective and fear was gone like that. Like that. Unbelievable. What an unbelievable way of living. Yeah. And you know what I have to understand about that? So it's really a product. My talk to him was really a product of my first fifth step, because that's how I learned you do things eventually. Sometimes you're in a lot of pain before you do it, but eventually, if you're in this program, you're fessing up to somebody. You know you got to talk to somebody about something. You can no longer live alone with these sort of fears and these worries. You've got to talk to somebody. And what he did, and let me tell you something, far better, like I said before in here, that I'd be humiliated in private, in his office, than to keep on going like I was going and get ultimately humiliated by reality in public. In public. He had done me a favor because he was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous and he wasn't worried about what I thought about him. He wasn't worried whether he was going to make a friend or what can I say so this guy won't hate me or won't gossip about me or stuff like that. He says, I'm just gonna tell him. You know, let the chips fall where, maybe he'll drink, maybe he'll drug, maybe he'll run out, maybe I'm just gonna tell him. And because of that, I'm free. Because of that deal, I'm free. Now, of course, wouldn't you know it? We went back about an hour later and he was given a talk, and the talk was on people who gossip about other people. And I could swear he was looking at me. I just knew he was looking at me. Every time I said, that guy is looking at me. Yeah, I felt so guilty about it, you know, because I had already shared it about three people, don't go to that priest, you know. So God bless you. Next week we'll talk about stuff.